Good morning, Los Angeles, and welcome to another edition of the Weekend Warrior Show. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Clapper. I'm an orthopedic surgeon at Cedars-Sinai. We can drop the music out. I'm so excited to have in studio with me a surgeon who combines the world of medicine, the world of surfing, and honestly, the world of art. He's the Michelangelo of ear surgery, Dr. Douglas Hetzler. You see, Dr. Hetzler treats a disease that people like me, surfers, get, and it's called surfer's ear. I have this disease, and when you spend so many hours in the water, the wind and the water and the temperature of the water cause your ear canal to get blocked due to an overgrowth of bone called an exostosis. The Clapper vision is your galvanized pipe in your kitchen gets rusty and it starts to block the flow. You turn the faucet on and no water comes out. The rust. That's what Dr. Hetzler treats, is the rust that builds up in your ear canal to the point that you trap water, you get infections, and you can't hear anymore. And Dr. Hetzler has designed a better way to use a hammer and a chisel to widen the ear canal and bring it back to normal, not using a drill, which can damage your hearing. But the effect of the wind on our ear canal made me think all week, because you know how much I love the world of art, the world of sports, and the world of medicine. Where is this problem or issue of wind on a canal in art and in sports? So I thought about it. Well, in art, the father of music from the 1940s. Now, this is the transition from jazz in the 20s and 30s, Louis Armstrong and all that. Before rock and roll comes in the 1950s, there's a period of time during World War II, the transition, and it's called bebop. The inventor, the creator of this music, bebop, is a man named Charlie Parker, better known as the Bird. Charlie Parker revolutionized music because of his use of wind in a tunnel, which happens to be the alto saxophone. You have got to hear this story of how it all came about and who is interviewing him. None other than the greatest saxophone player who played with Dave Brubeck, Paul Desmond. In 1954, they sit down and have a nice conversation. A year later, Charlie Parker will die. He does not know this, but you're listening to a man a year before he's going to pass at the young age. You know how old he was? 35. He's doing this interview and he's 34 years old. It's really remarkable to revolutionize a world. I don't care whether you're a plumber, an electrician, a surgeon, you name it. There are those of us, and Dr. Hetzler's one of them, who changed the practice of their world. And we're going to get into it. And I can't wait to actually have Dr. Hetzler tell us his thoughts about Charlie Parker. Well, what about in sports? Where do we see the modification of wind leading to heroic success? In the National Football League this season, all the records for a quarterback, that ball flying through the air in a pass, are going to be crushed by a guy who's barely 6 feet tall, Drew Brees. He did this at Purdue in the Big Ten. Everywhere he goes, he breaks records. And he's about, at age 40, to be the greatest quarterback of all time, statistically, because of the accuracy of the way he throws a football. Well, guess where that accuracy comes from? There's a little secret of why he is so accurate. And it involves something called wobble. And that is the effect of gravity pulling the nose of the football down, but because of the spin that he puts on the football, he makes that football spin faster than a lug nut coming off of an Indianapolis 500 race car. You know when they take the tires off? The spin of that tool to take the lug nuts off, Drew Brees' football goes as fast as that lug nut drill. But that causes the football to rise. So gravity brings the nose down. The spin on his ball makes it go up. And that leads to something called wobble. And that is why Drew Brees is the most accurate football thrower of all time. Clapper Vision, we got to talk about Paul George. Last May, he has his right shoulder rotator cuff surgery. A month later, in June, he has his left shoulder labral repair. We need to get into, with some Clapper Vision, of Paul George, who's going to be joining the Clippers, or has already joined the Clippers, and Staples Center is going to be on fire this season. I just cannot wait till that first Laker-Clipper game. And we'll get into Clapper Vision with Paul George. The number is 877-710-ESPN. Call in and I'll be able to talk to you about all kinds of things, orthopedics. But I want to get into today's show. And I cannot wait at 7:15 to talk to my in-studio guest, Dr. Doug Hetzler. But listen to one of the greatest jazz songs of all time, particularly to the saxophone. This is jazz. This is Dave Brubeck. And the guy playing this alto sax is Paul Desmond. Listen to what is standard, a really, really great sax player, and what it sounds like. Listen to the pace. And it's called Take Five because Dave Brubeck and Paul Desmond are revolutionizing jazz. Because football has only four quarters. There is no fifth quarter. Overtime is not a fifth quarter. But Dave Brubeck is called Take Five because the note is to the fifth note, even though you're only allowed four. But listen to that sax. Now listen to the revolution. This is Charlie Parker playing that same instrument. Listen to the pace. The wind is flying through that tube in a whole different way. This is called bebop, and Charlie Parker is the inventor. So here we have Paul Desmond talking to Charlie Parker, who's the most humble genius you'll ever hear speak. He's an aw-shucks guy. This is what I thought music should sound like all along. I'm not trying to change the world. This is what it sounds like to me. Oh, my God. And just listen to the dignity and the respect the two men at the height of their field have for each other.
There's many good people playing in that record, but the style of the alto is so different from anything else that's on the record or that went before. Did you realize at that time what effect you were going to have on jazz? And you were going to change the entire scene in the next 10 years?
No, I had no idea that it was that much different.
Wow.
I'd like to stick in a question, if I may. I'd like to know why there was this violent change, really. After all, up until this time, the way to play the alto sax was the way that Johnny Hodges and Benny Carter played alto. And this seems to be an entirely different conception, not just of how to play that particular horn, but music in general.
Yeah, how to play any horn.
Yeah, how did you revolutionize the whole idea of music, Charlie Parker? This is what he says.
I don't think there's any answer to
the way you
speaking, John. Yeah, that's what I said when I first started talking. That's my first conception, man. That's the way I thought it should go, and I still do. I mean, of course, it could stand much improvement. Most likely in another 25 or maybe 50 years, some youngster will come along and take the style and really do something with it, you know? But, I mean, ever since I've ever heard music, I thought it should be very clean, very precise, as clean as possible anyway, you know? And more or less to the people, you know, something they could understand, something that was beautiful, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's like asking Steve Jobs, why'd you invent the iPhone? Well, I never liked the way the telephone was. I figured we should have a computer be the telephone. It's amazing how matter-of-fact he is.
Well, definitely there are stories and stories and stories that can be told in the musical idiom, you know? You wouldn't say idiom either. It's so hard to describe music other than the basic way to describe it. Music is basically melody, harmony, and rhythm. But, I mean, people can do much more with music than that. It can be very descriptive in all kinds of ways, you know? All walks of life. Don't you agree, Paul?
Yeah, and you always do have a story to tell. It's one of the most impressive things about everything I've ever heard of yours.
Well, that's more or less the object. That's what I thought it should be.
Uh-huh.
Just the respect they have for each other.
Another thing that's been a major factor in your playing is this fantastic technique that nobody's quite equaled. And I always wondered about that, too, whether there was whether that came behind practicing or whether that was just from playing, whether it evolved gradually.
It takes years, right, Dr. Hetzler? Years, sure, for it to happen. All right, listen to Charlie Parker's response. Did you practice a lot? Did you have to train for it?
Well, you make it so hard for me to answer, you know, because I can't see where there's anything fantastic about it at all. I put quite a bit of study into the horn, that's true. Mm-hmm. In fact, the neighbors threatened to ask my mother to move once when I was living out west. I mean, they said I was driving them crazy with the horn. I used to put in at least 11, from 11 to 15 hours a day.
Yeah, that's what I wondered.
Well, that's true, yes. I did that for over a period of 3 or 4 years.
Oh.
Yeah.
I guess that's the answer.
Well, yeah. That's the facts anyway.
It takes time. How about in sports? Where do we see the modification of wind taking new heights in that field? It's Drew Brees. Here's Drew Brees talking about the mechanics of taking his foot to his calf, to his knee, to his hip, and that energy coming out of the turf, ending up at the tip of his finger.
To throw the perfect pass, it's all about the kinetic chain. It's now just a matter of that rhythm of the energy being transferred from my feet, then to my hips, all the way up to my shoulders. And as my arm's coming through, the last thing to leave the ball is that index finger. Comes out, spins perfectly. Your receiver catches it. Touchdown.
Yeah, he's like Charlie Parker. No big deal. I just get into a routine. The hours he puts in for that technique, just like my 30 years of doing knee and hip replacements and shoulder replacements, and Dr. Hetzler working on the ear. It's actually not an aw shucks answer. It's putting the time in.
To test Drew's accuracy against an Olympic archer, from 20 yards away, Drew will be zeroing in on an official Olympic archery target. In Olympic competition, archers score a 10-point bullseye if they make it inside the first two yellow circles, which is only 4.8 inches in diameter.
Every kid who wants to be a quarterback starts training by trying to hit this target. The red circle on our target is the same size as a regular car tire.
Car tire.
And the bullseye is actually 1/3 the circumference of our football.
Gee.
Which means, good luck. It's hard to hit.
It's such a small target that even Olympic archers have trouble hitting it. In the 2008 Olympics, of all the arrows shot, the world's best archers hit the bullseye less than 50% of the time. And 50% also happens to be close to the average completion rate in the NFL.
Wow.
To help us analyze the flight of Drew's passes, he'll be throwing the world's most high-tech football, outfitted with custom internal accelerometers. The data from these sensors will be downloaded to a computer, which will track every aspect of the football's trajectory, including release velocity, launch angle, and spin rate.
That's impressive.
And now they're going to learn, first of all, Drew Brees hits the target in the center 10 out of 10 times. He puts the archers to bed, basically. And now they start to analyze, where is this accuracy coming from?
So how is Drew able to hit the bullseye with such precision?
You've done it so many times, it's muscle memory. You're just thinking, you know, get rid of it as quickly as I can to the spot that I want to throw it.
The data from our groundbreaking high-tech football reveals the surprising secret of Drew's amazing accuracy. Drew's passes are fired with uncanny consistency. Each is released at 52 miles an hour with an identical 6-degree launch angle.
He's playing that horn like Charlie Parker. He's throwing that football with that consistency.
Drew releases the ball spinning around its long axis at almost 600 RPM. That's as fast as an air wrench spins a lug nut off a NASCAR tire. This creates a gyroscopic torque. And gravity tries to pull the nose of the spinning ball downward. But the aerodynamic forces of wind flow over the ball, counterbalancing each other to keep the ball on target.
And this is called wobble.
Wobble occurs as the ball spins slightly off axis. It's the small circle the nose traces in the air. Surprisingly, a little wobble is necessary to keep the ball on target. And this is the amazing secret to Drew's accuracy. His passes have just the right amount of wobble. Three small wobbles for every five spins of the ball.
The most accurate player, quarterback of all time.
If a defender is on your receiver, sometimes you're just throwing it to that spot where only your receiver can catch it and the defender can't get to it. You know that defender's range. You know where to put the ball to where he can't get it, but your guy can.
Because with defenders swarming around, it's not enough to be more accurate than an archer. A pro quarterback has to be able to thread that needle.
He modifies the wind for accuracy. What would it sound like in music? He's modifying the wind and feeding off his bandmates. Charlie Parker said, I don't want to be in a big band. It's too many instruments. And I don't want to stick to the script. I'm going to invent bebop. Take three guys, four guys. And we're going to use the wind in the room and modify and revolutionize the way music is heard. And Drew Brees is pretty matter-of-fact about it. I just throw the football to the guy who I think is open. Nope. There's a lot more going on than that. There's a lot more going on when the wind modifies your ear canal and creates a bump in the bone that blocks you from hearing. Yeah, just drill it out. Nope. That has its own problems. The world of art, the world of sports, the world of medicine, and how it reacts to wind is what I want to talk about with Dr. Hetzler. Coming up next, you're listening to the one and only Weekend Warrior Show here on ESPN LA 710. Everyone knows it's windy. What a great song. Who's breaking out? Everyone knows. This song, Windy, by the Association. And for those of you listening who are Filipino, first of all, Magandang Umaga. Umi ihi bang pasyente mo. Which means, is my patient peeing, by the way. But revolutionary in the 60s, this band, the Association, and their guitar player was from the Philippines. And it was not easy to be on the television in those days in America and showcasing your guitar player who didn't look like everybody else. But they did it. He recently passed away, I think. I forgot his name. But for those of you from the Philippines, take great pride when you hear this song because it's just beautiful. Windy, the Association. All right. Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. I'm so excited because it gives me great pleasure to meet surgeons like myself who recognize the power of art in their world, who love sports and can somehow combine it all. So when I surf, and when those of you who do surf, who are listening, I hope, are sitting waiting for waves, it's kind of like going fishing. You're not catching fish all the time. You're fishing. Fishing is waiting. But the meditative part of surfing, which is what I love the most, is waiting for the waves. It was my birthday this week on Wednesday. And I got 3.5 hours in the ocean because I took the day off, sitting on my board, looking at the horizon, trying to imagine where that wave is coming from. That's the meditative part of it. You know, there's something in my ears, Steve. I hear background. Can you hear that? Anyway, that's the meditative part. But while I'm doing that, guess what's happening? The wind is blowing. And there's cold water, and my eardrum, between my outer ear and where my eardrum is, the canal, does not like the wind and the water, and I'm getting a growth inside that ear. It's called surfer's ear. And my guest right now, the great Dr. Doug Hetzler is my guest in studio. Doug, thanks so much for coming down from Santa Cruz to be with us.
Dr. Klepper, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Tell us what surfer's ear is. You're an expert in this. You deal with this. Thousands of cases you've done. You've revolutionized the way to take care of us. Teach us a little bit. What is surfer's ear?
So surfer's ear is basically a bone growth that occurs as a reaction to cold stimulation in the ear canal. Mm-hmm. So the skin of our ear canal is some of the thinnest skin in the body. It's paper thin. And so when cold, particularly cold water, which really transfers a lot of heat more so than air, touches that area, it causes blood to congest in the skin, which causes high pressure on what's called periosteum. Mm-hmm. Periosteum responds to pressure by generating new bone. So for thousands of hours, you can have layer upon layer of bone form, kind of like a almost like wood grain or a crystal as this stuff grows. And so you can have these closing off the ear canal, and then that can trap water, which then can lead to infections, the pain associated with that, and of course, irreversible hearing loss. And the reason it's so common in surfers is you can blame it on when the wetsuit came along. Hmm. Before that, I mean, I've looked in the ears of people in their 80s up in Santa Cruz who used to surf on longboards, take one or two rides, stay dry, and then go get by the fire on the shore. They weren't getting in the water. So when the wetsuit came along, people started duck diving because mm-hmm. their body was warm by the kept warm by the wetsuit. And when that happened, that cold water went in their ears. And so that the phenomenon of surfer's ear began being described in the 1970s. Hmm. Although you look back historically, they were seeing this in people in the 18, they were operating on this condition in 1800s, hmm. not in surfers, but people that spent time in water for various reasons. And there was actually in
pirates.
people going for food, you know,
Raider fans
back in the day as getting in water for food. But there was actually a skull that was judged to be 9,000 years old that they saw evidence of this. Hmm. And it was in a coastal area in South America. And so that person was probably going in the ocean to get food. People weren't going in cold water recreationally in those days.
You know, as a orthopedic surgeon and doing, you know, hundreds and hundreds of hip, knee, shoulder replacements a year for 30 years. People always ask me, what's arthritis? And one of the consequences of wearing out the cartilage in your joint is you get what's known as bone spurs. And they always ask me, why am I developing bone spurs? What are the bone spurs? You win a Nobel Prize if you really have an answer. But the best answer I can give you is, as you wear out the cartilage, your joints now have more wobble in them, just like the football that Drew Brees throws. Because as the cartilage goes away, there's now more sloppy space in the joint. So it microscopically is banging into the capsule and the ligaments that surround it. And probably your body is trying to create stability for an unstable joint because of the loss of the cartilage, the wobble that now occurs. And that micro trauma bangs on the bone, and therefore the bone starts to grow. That's probably where the bone spurs come. The body's attempt to try to give stability, as if it's thinking, to an unstable joint. In your mind, thousands of these cases that you see, why does the body create the exostosis of surface ear? Is it in some way trying to protect the eardrum itself?
I guess you could think of it in those terms. I mean, I think it's a phenomenon that does not occur anywhere else in the body. Hmm. I mean, every place says you get more insulation with our skin, our fatty layer, muscles, that kind of thing. I mean, in a way, it's almost too bad you can't harness it. If somebody had osteoporosis, you know, if you could go dip in the cold water of the ocean periodically, if their bones would get stronger, but that doesn't work. So I think people tend to think of it as, yeah, the body's trying to kind of protect itself from this noxious irritant that's coming from the outside.
I'm just going to take advantage of the fact that I have someone like you in the studio right now, so I apologize already for picking your brain, but I just love this. We all know what speakers are, because if you're in your car right now, or actually you're listening to the radio, there is a speaker in whatever it is that you're listening to me right now, and I appreciate all of you for listening and telling all your friends. The bass, the woofer, the tweeter, the different designs of speakers are taking the vibration, the sound wave, as a surfer I can talk about that, the sound wave that's going through the air hits a drum, which then amplifies it. Now electricity's involved, and you therefore have the receiver and the speaker that takes place. We're essentially just copying what God made in our ear, right? So the sound wave hits the outer portion of our ear, the external part of the ear, which, by the way, is slightly facing forward. We don't have Mickey Mouse hats on where the ear is 90 degrees, right? It faces forward a little bit to capture the sound. It then goes through the widest portion of the canal, then it gets narrow, and then it hits the tympanic membrane, the eardrum itself. Tell us what happens. This mechanical banging on a drum, literally, becomes an electronic signal to the brain. How the hell does that happen? And by the way, there are three bones that can become arthritic involved, which is why I love ears so much, because there's three bones that get arthritic. So take us through your Dr. Hetzler version of the miracle of hearing.
So the sound comes down that canal, and the eardrum moves in three dimensions. Think of it as kind of like a sort of like a cone. It's a very flat sort of a cone, but there's sort of a depression in the middle.
I'm Jewish. I know a lot about cones.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry.
And so then that creates certain movement patterns in the surface of the eardrum. Mm-hmm. And then the eardrum is attached to a bone called the malleus, also known as the hammer. Hmm. That pivots, and then that's attached to a bone called the incus. Mm-hmm. And then that pivots and is attached to a bone called the stapes, which is, looks like a little English saddle stirrup. Hmm. And then that's connected by, it has some mobility, and the underside of the stapes goes into the anterior fluids. That creates pressure waves in those fluids. So everything up to this point is mechanical. So you have the sound, the sound wave, eardrum, the three bones, then the pressure waves get started in the fluids of the inner ear, what's called the cochlea. And then within the cochlea, there's a tube that has what are called hair cells. And if you look at these in a high magnification, they look like little blades of grass in kind of a zigzag pattern. Hmm. And those become deflected by that fluid wave. And this this long tube is kind of organized like a piano keyboard. So the hair cells that are closest to the outside hear very high-pitched sounds. As you go to the inwards, and it's a spiraling sort of arrangement.
It's like a snail cut in half.
Yeah. And the inner part of that is the lowest pitched. So, you know, ostensibly humans can hear from somewhere around 20 cycles per second up to 20,000 cycles per second, a young child. You and I probably can't hear those ultra high frequencies. Mm. But and then that toggle of that hair cell then sends an electrical signal, and then it goes through the cochlear nerve, it goes to the brain, auditory cortex, and then we make sense of it. It's remarkable. It's really incredible.
How does it become electrical, though, from the grass and the fluids? How does it become electrical?
So the toggle, yeah, the toggle of that hair cell, then that triggers a signal to be sent down the nerve.
All right, I want to get into what you've done with hand tools, sculpting like Michelangelo on this rock or this bony growth. And the fact that it's shaped like the skins of an onion is fascinating to me. And we'll get into it. We'll pay some bills. Coming up next, we'll just continue the conversation, and then the clinic will be open. The number is 877-710-ESPN. I'm having a big treat today talking to a surgeon, an ear surgeon, the great Dr. Doug Hetzler from Santa Cruz. This is Jimi Hendrix. The Wind Cries Mary. Ah, I love this song. Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. What a treat to be able to have the great Dr. Doug Hetzler, a world-renowned ear, nose, and throat surgeon who specializes in chipping away the bony growth in your ear, especially for surfers, that blocks your hearing. And I have it to some degree, because before we started the show, he actually looked inside my ear, which was fantastic. Thank you, Dr. Hetzler, for
that. You're
welcome. All right, let's talk about Michelangelo, my favorite artist of all time. You have elected, unlike other surgeons, to rotor-rooter the ear canal because of these bony growths, but not to use a drill, but to actually use hammer and a chisel like the master did 500 years ago. And you've even designed your own tiny little straight chisels and curved chisels because you think it's much more elegant. Tell us a little bit about what it's like to have come up with a different way that people might mock you that it's archaic. How could you not want to use a laser or a power tool? But in fact, it's better to use the hammer and the chisel.
So people were using hammer and chisels back in the 1800s. You know, if you look back at old accounts back then, because they didn't have drills. And then the first drills that came along were a foot pump treadle drill. It's kind of a variation of a sewing machine. And then electric drills came along. And it's, you know, like a hot knife through butter. I mean, it can move things quickly. But the concern I had was some of the patients, I had used a drilling technique when I was first in practice. We were seeing patients that are experiencing some high-frequency hearing loss after those procedures, and the concern being the noise of the drill. Mm-hmm. And it's been shown that the drill can generate 125 decibels. And there are some ear operations I have to do. I have to use a drill, things in the mastoid, these various things. I don't have any other good options. But with these bone growths, the surfer's ear, the exostosis, it grows in layers. So it's like working on a crystal, like working on a wood grain. Mm-hmm. And the stock instruments you can buy off the shelf from medical suppliers usually get down to about 2 millimeters. And I want to acknowledge someone who helped design these, a fellow named Wayne Robinson, was a technician that worked in the operating room with me. And he worked with some of the suppliers as well, and we were able to get these down to 1 millimeter in wow. width and a knife edge, very, very sharp. And so if you have this layered bone growth and you can approach it with these sharp, small instruments, it tends to come off in plates. And in doing that, you can work.
So let's just, before we go further, people understand how you buy an onion and it has the onion skins. People know when you cut down a tree, you can look at the layers because every year the tree gets a new circle. So you can tell how old a tree is because you can see the rings inside the cut down tree. Is that how this grows in your ear? Does it look like an onion skin? Does it look like a tree?
Yeah, exactly. I've got some pictures that would show it. It really looks like wood grain. Mm-hmm. And so it's like layers are being deposited on top of each other. It's from the top where the bone is added. And you know, this grows in all different fashions. If you look at 100 different people that have this condition, everybody's is different.
So you can really basically say that the ear canal is the countertop in your kitchen. And what you're doing with your chisel is actually getting between the coffee pot that's sitting on the counter of your kitchen. The growth is the coffee pot, but the real surface is that surface of linoleum or whatever in your kitchen, the formica. And your chisel's getting between the coffee pot and the top of the counter, and the coffee pot now is removing versus going into the countertop or into the coffee pot. You're trying to find that plane between the coffee pot and the countertop.
And it's not an obvious plane. I mean, it's all bone, and so it's all white, and it's all kind of one consistency. So you have to be incremental. You can't – it's not like a – you know, there's no dotted line to cut on in doing these operations.
Does the chisel help you find the plane between the coffee pot and the countertop?
To some degree. I think, as you know, we all have a native contour of our ear canal, and this other bone gets put on top of it. We aren't born with these things. And what I find is I'm going down, sometimes the quality of the bone changes. It may become very white, sort of chalky, and that's sometimes a clue that you're getting down to the native bone. But it has to be done in an incremental way because, as again, there's no dotted line to cut on that says exactly where the demarcation is.
Do you remember the moment when you said to yourself, I don't want to use a power tool here. I'd prefer to use a hand tool. It's better.
Well, I think when I was using these instruments, I blended in the technique. It's not as though I abandoned the drill one day and just said, I'm going to use the chisels from now on. I would, you know, if I could see a nice distinct knob, say, oh, I can probably take that off pretty easily and safely with the chisel, and then I'll drill the rest of the way. And that transition from chiseling to drilling got to the point where I did less and less drilling, and the chisel really took over. And so
you're like Charlie Parker. He started in the big bands and then one day realized, we don't need to be doing the big bands. We can play jazz, but I want to modify it. So it was a work in progress for you.
He's a much better instrumentalist than I am. I play trumpet a little bit, but I'm, you know.
Before I let you go, because we're up against the clock, how about earplugs? You're involved with creating an earplug. Where can people get it? And do you have a website? I want you to tell us that.
So there have been a number of things over years. I mean, there's a fellow in Santa Cruz, Robert Scott, that originally started something, Docs Pro Plugs. Those have been around for a long time, and he's very instrumental in making surfers aware of this condition. There's some newer styles that are out there. There's something called Surf Ear, which has a kind of a flexible flange. And a lot of people's objection with earplugs has been that they can't hear well with them in, and they think mm-hmm. that it affects their surfing abilities. So these are better and better at letting the sound through. And also at the same time fitting, everybody has a different shaped ear canal. So you want to have something that fits these various contours readily. And so the products, I think, are getting better and better.
And a website, how can we find out more about you?
If you just basically Google Surfer Ear or Surfer Ear Surgery, you'll find the website. There's some videos on there that show some of the things we do and provide information.
I want to thank you so much for making a trip to come all the
thank
way
you.
Down from
thank
Santa
you for having
Cruz.
Me.
And you're going to be going to the Getty Museum, so you're going to really see the combination of sports, medicine, and art. The Cycladic sculptures, the oldest sculptures known to man, maybe they were painted, but the paint has come off. So what you see now in marble is a circular disc with just what looks like a nose, no eyes, no lips. It's the most modern-looking sculpture you'll ever meet, and yet they're the oldest sculptures we actually have on this planet. I'm jealous that you're getting to go to the Getty Museum today, but I'm glad you came down here and are filling your day with art. It's really a pleasure to have you here today.
Glad to be here.
All right, Warriors, the number is 877-710-ESPN. I'll take your calls. The clinic will be open. Let me tell you, I treated myself to the best chili cheese hot dog I've ever had, and I had it yesterday. I had two of them. Oh, my God. Sometimes you have a craving. The best chili cheese hot dog I've ever had is here in Los Angeles, and I'm going to tell you where that is. Coming up next on the Weekend Warrior Show here on ESPN LA 710. Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. Thanks so much for listening every Saturday and telling all your friends. Tom Hofarth says from the LA Times, we're in the top 10 of sports talk hosts in Los Angeles. Love that. Thank you, Tom Hofarth. That's right, Kobe. All right, let's go to Jeffrey in Hollywood. You're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help?
Hi, doctor. I called last week.
Have you been listening to the show about Surfer's Ear?
Yes, sir.
How
yes,
we doing? Sir. Pretty Charlie interesting.
Parker Charlie Parker and Paul Desmond, too.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing?
That was Larry Ramos from the association, by the way. The league
Larry Ramos. Thank you. Oh.
Yeah, I'm a music person, so there
Paul,
you go.
Paul Desmond, right? He's also
Paul
understated.
Desmond.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And a year later, Charlie Parker is going to pass away at 35 years old.
Yeah, way too soon.
Way too soon. All right, how can I help, Jeffrey?
It's not good. I got my findings back. Suprastinitis.
Wait. So go to the impression.
Okay, got the impressions. Gotcha.
Okay, read it and go slow.
Yes, sir. Full thickness tear.
So full thickness. So there's three stages of a tear of the tendon, the supraspinatus, the rotator cuff. Stage one, the spur, kind of like walking into a cave. Or walking into Dr. Hetzler's eardrum, and rather than being a beautiful circle cave that you could walk through, there's a stalagmite coming out the roof that's making you have to go to the left because the cave got more narrow, like an icicle coming down. That's what a bone spur is in that space under your acromion bone, and it starts to scrape instead of the top of your head as you're walking through the cave. It's scraping the rotator cuff. Stage one, you're just scratching the top of your head. Stage two, it's banging into your head. And stage three, you can't walk at all because you have a hole full thickness through the tendon. So one is a scratch, two is a partial thickness tear. You have a full thickness tear, so you're going to need surgery. Go ahead, keep going.
Yes, sir. Okay, with retraction to the glenohumeral joint.
Okay, so it's been there a while, so God has blessed you being tough and strong, Jeffrey, which is a blessing and a curse, because many patients come and see me when they are at stage one. Their shoulder hurts, they have a little bit of pain,
God.
You get an MRI, and you go, hey, I'm just going to get rid of the spur before it scratches the tendon. Those folks are great, you're just removing the badness. Partial thickness tear, same thing, I can get rid of the spur, you don't have to put stitches in the tendon, it'll heal on its own. But when I see people who are stage three, like you got to not only get rid of the spur, but you have to put stitches in the tendon because the tendon then pulls away because it's like a rubber band. It pulls away from its anchoring site, kind of like, here's a Clapper vision, a boat tied up to a dock with a rope. The rotator cuff, which is what attaches the boat to the bone, to the dock, the rope is tied up to the cleat. You've ripped the cleat right off the dock, so your boat is starting to drift away from the dock. Your tendon drifts away from the bone itself. You literally have to go and grab it, put stitches in it, and reattach it to the bone itself.
Exactly.
All right, so you'll need to...
I'm learning a lot.
Yeah, you'll need to do some homework, always get a second opinion. You don't necessarily have to come to me, but you want to make sure, number one, don't let them shoot you with cortisone. That's crazy. Physical therapy is nice, and you can, God forbid you can't have surgery, you can go for that, but it's not going to bring the tendon back to where it came from. So electively, but do it sooner than later, because a small tear is easier to fix than a big tear. You're going to need to have this fixed.
I'm not going to be dramatic because I'm really depressed right now. Can I be helped?
Of course. Absolutely. Okay. I don't have any videos of this to show you of patients of mine, but I've got just tremendous athletes and weekend warriors that you get full range of motion. You have no pain. You get your full strength. You get to have your life again. Yes. Don't be depressed.
One more question, doctor. And thank you so much, because I'm, like I said, I'm really in a fragile state right now. Can you, is there anybody that I could be referred to for referrals as far as an ortho surgeon that would touch this?
Yeah. You live in Hollywood. You're not that far. I'm in West Hollywood. You want to come see me? It'll be my pleasure.
I can see you. The only problem is, and it's going to make me sound really bad, it's a work comp case.
That's fine. I take care of a lot of policemen and firemen. You just got to get through the crazy broken system.
Okay. I contact your office?
Yep. That'll be fine.
All right. And the incident happened on June 26th, so I hope I'm not having...
Jeffrey, okay. The best way to get into my office is to bring a chocolate babka from Bee's Bakery or from Delicious Bakery in Burbank. You bring a chocolate babka, forget about a copay.
I will do that.
All right, young man. Thanks so much for calling.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate you.
All right. Thank you so much. God bless. All right, Warriors. I'm going to take a break, pay some bills, coming back. I'll tell some stories. And I have the great Dr. Doug Hetzler in studio. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warrior Show.